In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 380. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. Got some good listener questions. So thank you to everybody that submitted those. We're breaking those down and looking forward to it.
Yeah, we always enjoy doing this because, you know, it's always a good mix of questions here. We got some prospect ones, some more MLB-focused ones, and it's always good just to get some different stuff here on the podcast. We like doing this every few months or so. I figured now is a good time to do it with, you know, about, what, 2 weeks or so in the spring training games, and the season's coming right up in a couple of weeks. So figured it'd be a good time to answer some listener questions. So thank you in advance to everyone that did. But before we get into all of those questions, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. And the show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content available with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Rotoballer's VIP Draft Kit comes with exclusive rankings and ATC projections from Nick Mariano and Ariel Cohen. It also includes plenty of content from Chris and I. Sync your leagues with TeamSync to use our live draft assistant and get customized expert advice for your league-specific settings. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use that discount code TOOLSHED for 10% off at checkout. All right, we'll start with the prospect-focused questions first, then get to the MLB ones later on in the show. Starting out with just a very simple, straightforward, to-the-point question. Is Cam Smith a top five prospect? I mean, simple answer is no. I mean, I think we both like Cam Smith a good bit here, but no, not right now. But do you think, Chris, do you think he could get to top five? I mean, for fantasy purposes, I think it's a little hard just because, you know, he doesn't provide a lot of speed, so it's kind of hard to get up to like that top five range without speed. But obviously, the power is very, very good. You know, solid field to hit. So, you know, how high do you think? Let's fast forward later in the season, say August or so. Where do you think Cam Smith is ranking in that point in time?
Yeah, I was just looking at the list, like the hitters that don't provide any speed that are ranked high. Like, you know, I'm looking at like a Samuel Basayo, like 10th overall. And could Cam Smith get there? Yeah, I think so. It wouldn't shock me. I think right now he's a top 25 prospect. I don't think he's a top five prospect, just given, you know, who you've got at the top. And the talent that is, some really good debut players as well up there. So, you know, I think he could get there. Also, I think it's you probably shouldn't get too high on spring. Like, you know, it's we're looking at 11 plate appearances, I think, at this point. And again, like the competition's still not all that great. There's some arms out there that aren't all that good. And that's not a takeaway from Cam Smith at all. But it's also to remember that when we're looking at these small samples in spring training, that a lot can happen. I think we just need to be careful. And that's not a knock on Smith. I like Cam Smith a lot. I mean, he's the name all offseason that we heard had really, really improved. And he's shown it. I mean, he's been very, very good so far. So, yeah, I think that he could vault up. I think he's going to put on an Astros uniform at some point this year. And he's going to be very, very solid.
Yeah, I don't see him ever getting to top five. I don't think I've ever ranked a prospect with little to no speed in that top five. I mean, like, Bisaio's, I can see back in top 10. Like, you can get to, like, that top 10 range. Like, you know, maybe he gets up similar to where, like, Kobe Mayo got up to, though I think Mayo has a little more power. You know, maybe Smith a little better field to hit. But overall, I think you could see them in a similar spot, or at least Smith getting up to that similar spot. But, yeah, like my top five right now, all these guys have speed. It's the Boston duo. It's Dominguez, it's Cruz, it's Jenkins, and then you got Walcott, Bazan, and Shaw. Like, these guys all provide at least some element of speed. So it's really hard. Unless the bat is, like, you know, 60 hit, 70 power type, which you don't see very many of those combination guys. So it's going to be really hard for a guy like Smith to get to my top five. But, yeah, he's definitely a very good pure bat, and I agree. I do think we see him later this year with Houston. Next one, any hope for a Khalil Watson bounce back? I mean, Chris, any I'm pretty out on Khalil Watson at this point, but do you have any hope for him anymore?
Nope. Way out. I mean, beyond the on-the-field struggles, the off-the-field stuff, is, we know, hasn't been good. And I think he struggled to stay out of his own head, and the performance just hasn't been there. So, yeah, no interest for me with Khalil Watson.
And remember when everyone was, like, beside themselves when he fell to 16th overall in the draft a few years back?
There was the reason.
Yep.
He was electric in high school, though. I mean, like, he had some absolute tanks. But, yeah, I'm just no interest.
Yeah, Watson's coming off. So he was with AA Akron last year, 96 games, slash 220, 305, 407. I mean, it wasn't a terrible season, but, like, he just can't. The averages have been really low. Yeah, just I think he'll probably end up debuting at some point, but I don't think he's ever anything we need to really keep on our radar for fantasy purposes, though. So, kind of an easier question there to answer. Next one, is Miguel Blais's depressed value largely due to injury, or are there other concerns? Chris, I think you've seen, have you seen Blais live?
Oh, yeah. He's in Greenville most of the year, so.
That's right. Yeah, you see him live last year. Well, what were your thoughts on Blais?
Well, it's weird because he improved a lot, like, under the hood. So, like, contact rates improved, chase rate improved, the exit velocities were good. Like, I saw quite a few balls hit over 110. I think he had a 112 and a half that he topped at. And he's getting other results. There's certainly the, be careful how I word it, but there's not off-the-field issues, but there's, yeah, the org wants to see him put in more work, I guess is what I'm looking for here. And he has the talent. Like, there's no denying the talent in Miguel Blais' skill set. It's just, is he going to put in the work to actualize it? Like, from a pure talent standpoint, yeah, like, he's absolutely got it. He's got power, he's got speed, and the hit tool's decent. He struggled a bit with breaking balls. You know, he hit a lot of pop-ups in the infield. So it's an interesting profile. I think it's too soon to completely jump ship on Miguel Blais, but I do think that 2025 is a pretty big make or break year for Blais.
Yeah, I think that's really fair to say, because, like, you know, he's been a name now for a few years in this Red Sox system. It's kind of supposed to be like that next week coming up behind the big three, you know, along with maybe Keoland Cespedes or Franklin Arias and Yosinson Garcia. So he hasn't really shown that yet, though. You know, last year had, you know, a ton of steals last year, 38 steals, 11 home runs. The slash line was underwhelming, but, you know, still a lot of good traits, like Chris mentioned. I mean, the approach was solid, you know, above, you know, 9% walk rate, 21% K rate. You know, still had a 74% contact rate. So you still have some good traits there, you know, decent raw power, still a good athlete. So I think it's a good time to buy low, just because, and, you know, as the question said, like, you know, the depressed value right now is keeping the perceived value in check, and the corresponding kind of cost is not going to be overly high. So I think he's a good, you know, upside play, good low, you know, low cost, you know, flyer right there. So in Dynasty League, so yeah, I'm not opposed to going out and getting Miguel Blais right now, given that lower cost. Next one here, who can make the biggest leap outside the top 100 prospects and crack into the top 50? My pick was, I mean, there could be, I could have gone like a bunch of different ways with this. I ended up going with Breylon Payne of the Milwaukee Brewers. He's an absolute electric athlete. Really good feel to hit and sneaky pop too. So if you really see, you know, the power take a step forward this year, and even if he's just a, you know, I don't even need to see 20 plus type of guy from him to get up to top 50. Even if he shows that he could be like a 15 to 18 homer guy, you know, given his feel to hit, given his electric speed, where he could be, you know, easily 30 plus steals every year. You know, this type of guy that could really shoot up rankings here, one of the more high upside guys in that 2024 draft class. So I'm going to go with Breylon Payne. Who's your pick for this, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, there were several, like, options that I considered here. Sebastian Walcott, just kidding, he's already very, very high. I think that the deep pick would be, for me, like a Johnny Level with the San Francisco Giants.
Ooh, I like that.
He did a lot of good things last year in the DSL. He's came stateside. The video I've seen looks really good of him. The underlying data is really good. So Johnny Level's kind of that deep guy to take that kind of jump. I think Tyson Lewis of the Reds couldn't make the jump as well. I mean, he's one that's been really, really spoken highly of from those that have seen him in the instructs and the Bridge League last year. And obviously, Griffin Burkholder, yeah, it's been my guy all draft season. And then I guess now a more popular Yairo Padilla for the Cardinals, who has vaulted up from 6 foot to 6'4" in the matter of a short period of time. He's added a lot of strength. He's a plus runner with above average contact rates and one that has got rave reviews since he came stateside. He was one of their best hitters in the fall hitting camp that the Cardinals had. Speaks highly because they've got some good hitting prospects in the system. So, you know, any of those guys, like, don't know a definitive one, but there's five names there that could potentially help you. So those will be my picks.
So you're thinking Johnny can get to a new level in prospect rankings this year?
Yeah, there's a lot of good puns that could take place with that.
I had to. Like, it's as a dad, I just have to. Dad jokes are kind of my thing. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of guys that we could see jump up. You know, I like a lot of, you know, you could see maybe, you know, if the power develops a little bit more with like a Dimitrio Crisantes, you could see him get up there. Eric Batanti, he needs the contact skills to really take a step forward, but, you know, he's not, you know, out of the realm of possibilities jumping up rankings either. A lot of fun names like George Lombard, he's having a really good spring. He's got, you know, pretty fun upside there too. So, yeah, definitely a bunch of names here that could jump up into the top 50. Always a fun question to think about. Next one. This was a fun one, this question here. Question was, who is the biggest prospect you two guys have or have had the biggest difference of views about? If he's graduated, who ended up being right? We didn't look back, because I'm sure there's been a bunch both ways. It's just how it goes. But the one we ended up on now that we have the biggest difference on, I believe, and there's probably a few more that we just didn't think of when we were kind of looking through our rankings before we started recording. But the one we got here is Colby Thomas of the Athletics, and I have him higher than Chris does. You know, for me, you know, Thomas is, you know, he's definitely not a perfect prospect. I mean, he definitely has his flaws, you know, contact concerns long term. But, you know, I think personally that he makes enough contact. You know, he's probably going to be more of like a 250 guy. I mean, he had a K rate right around 30% last year in AAA. It jumped from 18 to 30 when he went from AA to AAA. Walk rate, it's always been a little bit on the lower end. But, you know, with the power-speed blend that he brings to the table, you know, I think even if he's more like in the low 70s contact range, hitting more like 250, you know, could he get up to, you know, 20, 25 home runs and, you know, double-digit steals? So that's why I'm still a bit higher on him than Chris, but I'll let Chris explain why he's a little bit lower. So I think we have a 90 or so spot difference in our rankings, with Chris being obviously on the lower end. So Chris, why you have him much lower than I do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the skill set's fun. I mean, the power's there. He had a 9th percentile EV of 107 last year, which is above plus. Very, very good power. He pulls the ball at a high clip. One of the highest air pull percentages in the game. last year, which, I mean, that's obviously incredible. 31 homers, 81 extra base hits. Like, he absolutely lapped all minor leaguers in extra base hits. The contact's the problem. Like, he's hyper-aggressive, 35% chase rate. It's good zone awareness, though. Like, 83% in-zone swing rate's really good. The contact skills are my biggest question. 70% dropped to 67% in AAA. In zone was below 80%, but here's the real issue. While he does check boxes, the question is, how does he fare against good pitching? Against fastballs 94 miles an hour and above, he had a 63% contact rate and a 276 ex-WOBA against. The contact rate against breaking balls, just a tad north of 60%. He really struggles to get the pitches at the top of the zone. So with good riding fastballs up, his swing cannot get to him. The swing path is not where he can get to those balls. And so I think, okay, well, what's he going to face against major league pitching? Well, I think that's exactly what he's going to pitch to his weaknesses. They're going to throw good fastballs up, and he's going to get a lot of breaking balls. And so I see those things change. Like, I am really struggling with who Colby Thomas is. Like, is he just a fourth outfielder with fun tools? And that's my fear, because the downside is low. Now, the upside's there. We've seen that. I think we've discussed the stats. But I think that when you really dig in and when you watch him, you see the swing, I'm not fully buying into the Colby Thomas hype. And I think he's probably the biggest a sell of any prospect right now. Like, I would cash out on Thomas before the season starts, just me, because I think you can get a lot for him, and I'm just not buying the profile.
Yeah, you're always going to see a pretty wide range of opinions on these guys. Like, I think you can say that about really any, you know, of the more aggressive hitters. Like, look at, you know, even major league guys, first two that stick out, like Ezekiel Tovar, very aggressive. You know, a lot of people are really high on him or very low on him. I'm more at the lower end. You know, same with like a Sedan Rafaela, a Yainer Diaz. Some guys make it work, some guys don't. I mean, it's a very, you know, like I said, there's a wide, you know, kind of a boomer bust profile with a lot of these, you know, high chase rate guys. So, yeah, like I said, there's definitely flaws with Thomas. There's definitely some, you know, good strengths with Colby Thomas. It's a matter of, you know, can the strengths outweigh, you know, the pros outweigh the cons? And do the cons limit him too much so he can't start? A lot of questions that need to be answered here. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that now Chris and I are so far off on him, but it'll be fun to see how it develops this year. We'll see if, you know, see how he does, you know, in AAA and then with the Athletics at some point this summer. So definitely a fun player to watch. And next question makes me mad, just not because of the question itself, but because of just, you know, what the topic is. The question is it time to cut bait on Chase? I'm always on the freaking IL DeLauder. Everyone knows me. I love DeLauder. I mean, I think it's a top 10, maybe top 5 profile on talent, but then you got to factor in the massive red flag. And now it's like core, you know, core muscle surgery. It's like, it's not even like the foot stuff that's been bothering him. Now it's a completely different area of the body. Simple answer, no. No, you don't cut bait on a guy with this much talent. I mean, I would still say, you know, no for the, well, maybe not as much as hard of a no, but like on a Daniel Espino, it all depends on the depth of your league, obviously, and what you have to do to keep these guys, whether it be a price tag or whatever. But, you know, DeLauder, you know, you don't cut bait now. It's such a huge talent, and it could be a really high impact player, but obviously he keeps getting hurt. Maybe it's another story, but right now in, you know, March 6th, 2025, as we're recording this, my answer is a resounding no. What say you, Chris?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's tough. I mean, I'd probably sell low if I could. I don't think you just cut bait unless it's a very shallow league. And like, if there's 50 prospects rostered, then yeah, I think you cut bait. If there's 100 prospects rostered, probably not, unless he's like by far your worst, which I think you're doing pretty good if that's the case. But I'd probably just trade him and sell low, honestly. Like, I think that's what I'm doing. I struggle to see him staying on the field consistently. Like, all the injuries piling up, the bad feet, now core, like, it's not good.
Yeah, like I said, I've been very, you know, I've been holding out hope and keeping him pretty high in my rankings. Like, oh, maybe this will be the year, he's healthy. I mean, he was obviously one of the best, maybe the best, you know, talent out there in the AFL last year when Chris and I were out there. But yeah, it's you need to show me you can stay healthy, Chase. It's not like you're like super young prospect anymore. I mean, I think he's 23, he'll be 24, I think later this summer, I believe. But yeah, definitely needs to stay healthy. When he comes back from this, whether it's what, May or whatever, you need to, rest of the year, you need to be playing, whether it's AAA, majors, whatever, stay healthy, stay on the field the rest of 2025. All right, next up here, another guy that's kind of derailed by an injury last year, though. He wasn't out for a long time, but just wasn't the same after coming back, and that's Brock Wilkin. That is the topic of this next question, and the question is, what happened to the Brock Wilkin excitement of 2 years ago? I mean, obviously, there's still plenty of raw power there. That has gone nowhere. He still walks. That's gone nowhere. But just wasn't the same hitter. The K rate went, kind of reverted a little bit back to, you know, the improvements he made in his final year in college. And where the contact went up, K rate went down. You know, walk rate went up. Yeah, the walk rate's still high. Power's still there. But K rate, you know, ticked back up again. Contact skills were on the lower end. Not, like, super terrible, but definitely back down lower than they were. I still, you know, like Wilkin a little bit. I think he's a fine buy low if the price is low enough, which I think it is at this point. But I do have some questions. Like, all right, you got to get contact rate back up. Swing and strike rate's not terrible. It was around 12% last year, which isn't a bad metric or a bad mark, I should say. But you definitely need to see more out of Wilkin this year. But I don't know, I'm still semi-in on Wilkin. But you know, where are you at on Big Brock these days, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just concerned because he's had only one good year with respectable contact numbers, and that was his junior year, so his draft year. And given the lack of track record with contact and the floor's pretty low, like, I mean, you look at the profile, the power, yeah, it's fun. The body's also regressed a bit. Like, he's not the same build that he was at the draft. And I don't know, like, what is the outlook for him? Like, can he hit 220 and give you 30 home runs? I don't know. I mean, I've been uninspired when I've seen him. I'm just a little more out than in. I'm probably lower than a lot are on him at this point, but I don't know if he gets back to where people hoped he would be at this point.
Yeah, I'm even questioning that. I mean, I'm only looking to buy just because if it's basically, you know, you may be able to pick him up depending on your depth of your league, but if it's just a super low price tag where if it doesn't work out, you won't, you know, be mad about, you know, the cost you give up to get him, I'm okay with it there. But I wouldn't, like, be trading anything of high value right now for Wilkin, because even I have those questions, and I've been a pretty big Brock Wilkin guy after the draft. But next question, recent draft classes have all had some 6'7 physical freak breakouts, and person, you know, puts in parentheses, Wood, Schultz, Painter, Eldridge, etc. Who would be the 2024 class's version? We kind of look through this. There's not anyone that really fit that mold, you know, fully, Chris, right? We there's a lot of, like, those 6'5", like, strike the Nick Kurtz types that are, like, strong 6'5", the Condons, but there wasn't really any bigger or, like, 6'7", 6'8", guys that we thought, you know, kind of fit this mold.
Yeah, there's Ivan Breithauer, who he hit the home run on, like, the first or second day of spring training, and he's like 6'7", and everybody immediately comped him to Aaron Judge because his stance looks like him, and he has power. But yeah, I mean, it's, I guess if you want a 6'7" player, like, that's who it is. Sure. But also, like, look at the quality of the players that were mentioned in this question, like James Wood, like, that was a first round caliber player. Noah Schultz, first round caliber player. Painter, Eldridge, those are first-round caliber players. And it's just, like, a little bit different than Breithauer, who, yeah, he's fun. He's got power. Like, there's concerning contact, though, at the end of the day. And, you know, that's kind of my question. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's, like, a physical freak that's going to break out. I mean, Cam Smith's built pretty well, actually. We talked about Smith. Like, you know, Condon's 6'6", good athlete. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's somebody like the massive like this, but yeah, I don't know. I don't see it.
Yeah, I really don't either. Next question. Could you see Bubba Chandler and Roman Anthony on the opening day rosters for the Pirates and Red Sox? Simple answer, yes. But I'd say I would, if I had to throw $100 of my own money, I would throw it on both of them starting in AAA, but not being there long at all. I don't know, Chris. Maybe you're a little more optimistic than me that they make the opening day lineups.
No, I mean, I'd like to say yes, but outfield's probably the hardest to crack in Boston. Like, they've got a lot of guys. So I think Anthony's down for a little bit. Bubba, man, I want to. Like, I really want to believe that Bubba will break camp, but I just don't think that's the case. Did they follow the Skeens route with him? Yeah, I think that would probably be the way they go, honestly. So right now I would say the chances of both of them breaking camp are 20% together. So I don't know. I'm not confident in either.
Yeah, I kind of felt, you know, the Skeens time frame for Chandler as well. But, you know, I would say 100% chance that they're both in the majors more than the minors this year. Like, again, if they're both in AAA and it's, you know, early part of June, I would be shocked personally. I think, you know, in Boston, I mean, obviously Roman Anthony, you know, number one prospect, or arguably the number one prospect in baseball right now. But it seems like there's been a lot more talk about Christian Campbell breaking camp with Boston than Anthony. So, yeah, I think you see Anthony down in AAA, and maybe Campbell joins them. We'll see. But, yeah, I think they're both starting, you know, in AAA, but should be up soon. Another little Pirates here one. This is the last prospect-focused question. Can you convince me that the Pirates' development will help Connor Griffin reach a ceiling? Recent first-round hitters haven't exactly inspired confidence in Pittsburgh. I mean, I love Connor Griffin. I mean, I think he has the highest, like, ceiling for fantasy purposes in the entire draft class. And I'm like, Chris, what do you think about, I mean, I think the talent's undeniable on the upside, but do you have any concerns with Pirates' development history with on the hitting side with maybe limiting Connor Griffin?
I don't. I've gotten this question a lot, and, you know, let's just look at the history of who they've drafted, all right? You know, let's go back to 2023, obviously Skeens. They drafted Mitch Jebb out of Michigan State, like a college bat that had very low ceiling. They took Garrett Forster out of Oregon State, another one where it's like, eh, there's just like such minimal upside. They were kind of finished products. And they didn't touch a bat until the 13th round when they got Charles McAdoo, who did turn out being decent. They drafted Daniel Covey. He went to Miami, 17th round that year. Go to 2022, and I get it. Like, I know everybody will say, well, Tomar. Yeah, Tomar was that 2022 class. Tomar also, I think that he has changed who he is. Now, Tomar entered as a hit tool, a small hit tool type, and now he sells out for power. The approach is good. The contact skills are bad. He can't hit a breaking ball. I don't think that's on them from a developmental, like, loss. I don't think they have failed to develop Tomar. And he's also still 20 years old, so it's way too early to say that. Then you look at the other guys. I mean, they drafted Jack Brannigan in the third round out of Notre Dame, who's actually a good hitter. Like, Brannigan doesn't get much love, but Brannigan is a good prospect. They took Trez Gonzalez out of Georgia Tech in the fifth round. It's another low-ceiling type player. And then they didn't touch another bat until the 10th round, and they went way under slot with Tanner Treadaway out of Oklahoma. So, again, like, I'm just going down and looking at, like, these bats that they've drafted. I mean, we can go back even further. Like, they drafted Lonnie White has a ton of upside, but Lonnie White also probably should have played football. He was a four-star wide receiver recruit going to Penn State. He was a three-sport athlete. It's the risk that you run when you draft that kind of player. They knew there was swing and miss in the profile. They wanted to bet on the tools, and Lonnie White just hasn't developed the hit tool that he needs. Now, Henry Davis is a fascinating one. I struggle with that one because you can look at it and say, okay, did they just not develop Davis? I think Davis is a mental case. Look at Davis's numbers in the minors. Look at Davis's underlying data in AAA. It's really, really good. And he just struggles to translate to the majors. And I think that there's some mental struggle there with him that goes beyond the playing ability. Like, Davis has the intangibles to be a good player. They've also toyed with his position. They move him out to the outfield. We've seen prospects and players that have had to move positions and struggle with the plate because they're learning a new position. And then you look at some other kind of bats that they drafted. I mean, they got a senior sign in 2021 in the fifth round, Jackson Glenn out of Dallas Baptist. He was a $12,000 bonus. Mike Jarvis, a 7.5K bonus in the sixth round. So he just drafted bats that were cost saving. So again, like that was, Henry Davis, I guess you can say is an L. Go to 2020, Nick Gonzalez. Now, I don't know. I mean, I think the 2020 year was a complete toss-up regardless because we had such a small sample of college games to go off of. Like, teams didn't get to get out and see these players. Gonzalez got off to a scorching hot start that year. I've never really bought the profile. But, again, like, he was buzzy. And it was a guy that was potentially going to take off. And they whiffed. They didn't draft another hitter in that draft. It was, I mean, you go down, I mean, they drafted Jared Jones in the second round. Like, that was a great pick. Carmen Majitsky in the comp round. Like, that worked out. He's a bullpen arm for them. And I'll go back to 2019, but we're getting pretty far back at this point to say, like, they haven't really developed. And I get it. I know if you're a Pirates fan listening, then you're probably frustrated because you're like, yeah, we haven't developed anybody. But, like, you have to understand, like, what all goes into this and the fact that they've drafted so few hitters. So naturally, like, they're not going to develop as many when you don't draft as many. Go back to 2019. I'll stop there. Quinn Priester, first round. They drafted Sammy Siani in the comp round. I really liked what I saw from Sammy Siani in the AFL. I still think he could be a solid fourth outfield type. And again, prep outfielder, like, you run the risk when you take a smaller prep player like that. Matt Gorski, Gorski's fun. Like, I don't think he was ever going to be somebody that, like, took off and was a everyday player. But Gorski was an under slot in the second round. So, got to look at that. Like, what was their goal with that? Triolo in the third round. I mean, I don't know. Like, Triolo played for them, hasn't developed, made a huge win. But at the end of the day, like, I would say it's too soon to say that Tomar is a developmental fail. Henry Davis, like, you can't whiff on number one overall picks. Like, you just can't do that. And that's the concerning thing. Like, we've looked now and say, like, okay, like, Davis has failed to live up to the hype of a first overall pick. But, I mean, what's Spencer Torkelson doing? Like, obviously, that's been an issue too. Like, other guys, like, not everybody's hit. I mean, I know Holiday's hit, but Drew Jones went second overall. That's failed to hit. I don't think these are all on the org. I have some pretty good insight into Pittsburgh, and I think they do a tremendous job. I really do. I think they're scouting. I think they're player dev. What they're doing a really good job. So all that long-winded answer to say, like, I'm not worried about Connor Griffin. Like, Connor Griffin's going to reach his ceiling if Connor Griffin allows himself to reach his ceiling. It's not going to be, like, the org certainly has their hand in things, but you also got to realize some orgs are very hands-off in the way they do things as well. So I'm not sure I convinced you that the Pirates will help Connor Griffin reach his ceiling, but I don't really think they need to. I think that Connor Griffin has taken his development into his own hands. He said, look, I'm going to change my swing because I know I have to in order to make more contact. I'm going to bulk up because I have to in order to have the strength that I need to get to the power that I want. And he's a 70 grade runner. So I think you look at Griffin and he's doing all the right things for himself. So I think he will develop fine. I'm not worried about him a bit.
You know, and the one thing I'll add to that is every name Chris just mentioned, Connor Griffin has more upside than they did at that particular time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's easy to say that now. But, you know, as I mentioned, I think Griffin has the highest ceiling in this entire draft class. And even, let's just say, even if you think, you know, personally think that Pittsburgh is a bad player development organization, even bad orgs can develop good. Like, look at, I don't think overly highly of the Royals org, Bobby Wood Jr. Boom. Some talents just transcend, you know, organization. And, you know, every, as we've said many times, like, development is not linear. It's a case by case basis. All prospects develop differently, especially these younger high school guys where, you know, there's obviously a much higher bust rate on these guys than the more advanced collegiate guys. Like, obviously there's a higher bust rate on a Connor Griffin than there will be on a Travis Bezzana. So those are things you got to keep in mind. But yeah, I'm not overly worried either. I love Griffin. I'm trying to get him everywhere I can. I think the kid is an absolute stud, and people are going to see that very soon. All right, moving over to the MLB side, starting with the most random, out of nowhere, dominant stretch that I can remember in recent history. Bowden Francis with the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, the question is, what do you make of Bowden Francis this year? Had a strong finish last year, but is it real? I mean, yeah, strong finish is underselling it because he was like one of the best pitchers in baseball over the last, 2 months or whatever it was of the season. He got an ERA under one for a bit there. Absolutely ridiculous. Overall, 330 ERA last year in 103 and two-thirds innings, whip under one. I mean, I don't think Francis is entirely fluky, but I also don't think he's, another big impact arm. I don't think he's going to be, sticking as like a top 25, fantasy pitcher or anything like that. I mean, he doesn't walk many batters at all. I mean, that's always been, a strength of his, that he limits the walks. He's been around like 5.5-6% range for in his career so far, but not really a big bat misser. I mean, I think it's just going to limit him. I think he's going to be in like that Jose Barrios range where he's going to give you solid ratios, and around the league average K rate and limit the walks, but he'll be limited to like the top 50 to 75 range, something like that. So, I mean, the only real, offering that he missed bats with is the slider, which was 43.5% whiff rate, but it's his fourth most used offering at 9.2%. Goes primarily with the four-seam splitter, curveball. No big whiff rates there. So I think he's solid. I don't think he's going to be like this, again, star pitcher that's like one of your building blocks for your, dynasty pitching staff long-term. But what do you think, Chris, on Bowden Francis?
Yeah, I mean, the results came obviously from a pitch mix change that he made down the stretch. So, that was encouraging to see. Is it sustainable, though? I'm not sure. It's interesting to see, like, he decreased the four-seam usage all year. He upped the splitter usage in August, almost half the usage of it from August to September, threw more curves, threw more sinkers, and threw more sliders. Is it sustainable? Absolutely not. I mean, a 211 BABIP is not sustainable for anybody. It just is not going to happen. And a 78% strand rate is very, very high. Those numbers are not something that pitchers usually can control that well. Some can, but naturally these numbers regress towards the mean. So we see some BABIP regression. We see some strand rate regression. And at that point, then you're looking at kind of some different results because league average BABIP last year was 290, league average strand rate was 72%. So we see those things come down. I still think Francis can be a good pitcher. I think Eric threw him in the right range there. Like, he's going to be a high threes, low fours ERA type, good ratios, low strikeouts. So I think that it's real to an extent, but he's not like, I don't see him taking a huge, like an additional step.
Yeah, no, definitely an agreement there. Next question, which post-hype guy is most likely to pop off this year? Ben Rice, Andy Rodriguez, Gerard Encarnacion, or Brett Beatty? And we also had a second question with Gerard Encarnacion. What are your thoughts on Gerard Encarnacion? Lots of red on his Savant page last season. Chris, what do you think on Encarnacion and any of those four between Rice, Andy, Encarnacion and Beatty that you think could, pop off this year?
Yeah, I want to see a little more of Indy post-injury because I really liked Indy previously. The results so far this spring are good, but again, a really small sample, but everything under the hood looks pretty good with Indy Rodriguez as far as hard hit contact numbers go. So I like to see that, but I would say Gerard Encarnacion has the best chance at playing time. I know Ben Rice potentially getting some playing time now with Stanton out, but Encarnacion, like, he could take spot and keep it. I mean, he hits the ball incredibly hard. His contact rates are decent. They're better than most people give him credit for. I mean, he's already hit a ball 113 this spring. He put up exit velocities like that last year. I think it was 109 mile an hour ninth percentile, which was very, very good. He's aggressive in the zone. He makes contact at a little bit below average clip, but yeah, I do think Encarnacion is capable of being someone that could hit you 20 plus home runs and do it with a decent enough average where it'll play. So I think that that would probably be my pick, just given the fact that he has the runway to playing time. I think he's poised to start, and even if he's a platoon, you know, I think that I don't think that's the case. I think he gets the majority of at bats, and I think that he could thrive, honestly. Like, I really do believe that there's the power upside to play well beyond, like, and I know everybody kind of dings Giants hitters for the park, but that kind of power that Encarnacion has transcends any park. It's not particularly worried about him there. I mean, there's downside for sure, but there's downside with any of these guys. So I think you pick your poison and you realize that, yeah, I mean, I think that the power upside is there with Encarnacion, so he would be my pick for looking at, you know, potential, you know, buy low, post hype kind of guy.
Yeah, so I'm not like 100% out on any of the four. I mean, I have my doubts about all of them, especially, you know, I used to be pretty high in Rice, and Rice still hit the ball hard last year. And he had a higher barrel rate, but you know, he's kind of regressed a little bit, at least from when I saw him a bunch in Double A. Like, he took, what year was that? That would have been 2022 or 3. He got promoted in like June and then was like the best hitter in the league for the remainder of the season. But I'm not by any means out on him. Andy, I liked as well, ranked him fairly highly in prospect rankings before he got hurt. You know, maybe he's not a huge power guy, but I still think there's a solid bat in there and obviously a chance to play in Pittsburgh this season. So I'm kind of on board with, you know, buying low on Andy right now. And yeah, and Gerard Encarnacion, just, yeah, you mentioned, like, hits the ball insanely hard. I mean, you look at, he had a 58.8% hard hit rate last year. All right, for hitters that saw, I mean, I'm lowering the threshold a ton here, obviously, but for hitters that saw at least 400 pitches last year, he had the third highest hard hit rate. Only two ahead of him, probably heard of these guys, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. I mean, again, was the threshold very low because he only had 80 balls in play, but 58.8% hard hit rate, 15% barrel, 95-mile-an-hour average EV. I mean, he had a, you know, an XBA and X-slug way higher than his actual average and slug. And, yeah, if he gets a chance to play, I mean, maybe he only hits 240 or something like that. But if he gets, like, a full season worth of at-bats, you could easily see 30-plus home runs. He's always been a big power guy. Just never, you know, he's had some struggles keeping the average up, keeping the K rate down, and didn't really have a chance to play full-time in the past, and when he did have a chance, he didn't really do much with it. So, you know, maybe this is, you know, is, you know, he's a, definitely fits the post hype mold. He's 27 now, and yeah, if he gets that shot to play regularly or close to it in San Fran, there's definitely some intrigue there. That power could really be impactful for sure. We got a few more here. This one, pretty fun one. Prediction on the last two spots in the Minnesota Twins rotation. I mean, the Twins are, they have a lot of options. It's a good problem to have. Obviously, you can never have too much pitching, but, you know, outside of, you mean, the three that we know are in that rotation 100% are Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, and Bailey Ober, all very, you know, very highly drafted guys this year and ranked in Dynasty. But the final two spots, so it'd be some combination. You got Simeon Woods Richardson, you got Chris Paddock, you got David Festa, you got a little Zebby Matthews. So, Chris, how do you think this back end of the rotation kind of fills out? Because, I mean, I would love to, you know, like I mentioned earlier before we started recording, I would love for it to be Zebby. You know, hopefully he's healthy and everything. Zebby and Festa. I love the episode with Festa, and I'm pretty sure you do as well. I like Simeon Woods Richardson a little bit too, and I was, you know, I always root for him. I met his dad back in the day when he was in Double A. When I was watching his bullpen, his dad was insanely nice and like the most proud father I've ever seen in my entire life. He was a proud papa. And Paddock, I used to love, but in that picture with him on his debut with the cowboy hat will always be iconic. But get Paddock out of there. And then hopefully it's some combination of the other three. But how do you think this is going to play out, Chris?
I mean, they got a lot of bodies for sure. Triple A level, so it could go a lot of ways. I mean, right now on the 40-man, you do have Zebby, you've got David Festa, you've got Louis Varland, you've got Marco Raya on it. Yeah. They've got Travis Adams, who's also started in AAA. I mean, we know the top three are locked in. Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober. Then after that, which way does it go? Does Paddock start? Does he earn that spot? Does Simeon Woods Richardson earn that spot? The way Festa is pitching right now, yeah, I think that he does earn the spot. And with how good David Festa was down the stretch last year, it's hard to argue against him, especially carrying over with better stuff this spring. You know, Zebby's pitched well. He did leave today's game. I think it looked like he rolled his ankle. Haven't seen or heard. But Zebby could pitch his way in as well. So, yeah, I think it's a dogfight. I think it'll be interesting to see how it shakes between those four. I think right now it's probably Simeon Woods Richardson, Chris Paddock, Festa, or Zebby all kind of vying for those spots. And I think that it's going to come down the wire. I really do believe that. I think that they're going to give him full runway this spring to prove himself and see. So I don't have a great answer, but I do feel pretty good about Festa. I will say that.
Yeah, me as well. And I want it to be, like, if I was to rank them just like long term, Festa and Zebby are really close for me. I think Festa a little more upside, Zebby a little higher floor. Those would be the top two. And then I would have Woods Richardson third and Paddock fourth. Like, we know what Paddock is at this point. Doesn't really have a lot of upside for fantasy. I hope it's some combination of the other three, because I think that'd be the most fun and the most impactful for fantasy purposes. Next one here. In a redraft league, would you take Christian Yelich? Obviously, the talent's still there. And he's still, you know, when he's on the field, he's great. But I don't know. Like, the ADP is 120-ish range. He's going off the board as, like, the, you know, 27th, 28th, 29th outfielder, similar range to Riley Green, Spencer Steer, Randy Arozarena, Mike Trout, Pete Carl-Armstrong, Ian Happ, Dylan Cruz. So decent range there. I don't know. Like, I'm probably not, and that's not a knock on Yelich. It's just I like a lot of other outfielders more, especially, like, I'm probably getting my outfield two in, like, the, you know, 80-ish ADP range is where I'd be getting a lot of my outfield twos. You know, like C.S. Suzuki, Brian Reynolds, you know, Lawrence Butler, Brenton Doyle, guys like that. And then I kind of like, you know, I like the Ian Happs of the world, but I'd rather go Ian Happ. I'd rather go Dylan Cruz, etc. And I just don't feel totally safe taking Christian Yelich anymore. I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
I've taken him a lot. I mean, he's healthy.
Does he stay healthy, though?
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that where his value is, you're going to get enough. I mean, he's provided value year over year. I think he's become consistently underrated. I mean, he's 33, so you have to factor that in on top of the injuries. But, I mean, prior to last season, like, the previous two seasons were 671 and 632. So, yeah.
That is true, yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and say that he's injury prone. The skill set's there. The contact skills are as good as ever. The power numbers are still really, really strong. He just checks all the boxes you want to see. He runs elite OBPs. He's still going to steal bags. And he hits for power. So, yeah, I think Yelich is a great buy in redraft. I have taken him. I put money where my mouth is. I've taken him in a lot of big drafts so far.
All right. Two more questions, but one we already kind of touched on last episode, talking about, like, Ryan Weathers and, you know, the velocity and pitch shape from his fastball this spring that are both really good right now, both better. So we kind of already hit on that. So that was in last episode, 379. So you can hear our thoughts on that in that episode. But closing out the show with Dustin May. The question is, given the Dodgers' depth, what is the dynasty outlook for Dustin May? Chris, I don't know if there's a great answer to this question right now, because who knows with Dustin May? There's so many variables with him. I mean, obviously, first and foremost, is just health. I mean, even if he had a shot, he hasn't been able to stay on the field. The last three seasons he's been on the field, he missed 2024. He had 5 starts at 21, 6 and 22, and 9 and 23. I mean, he's pitched pretty well in his career, 3.10 ERA, crossed 191 and 2/3 innings, but really only had the 1 year, that was 2021, which was only 5 starts, where the K rate was good. I mean, either, you know, he's had 5 years in the majors. 2 years, he was right around league average K rate. That was 2019 and 2022. In 2020 and 2023, he was below average K rate, like 18-19%. Then the 1 year in 2021, in 23 innings, when he had 35 strikeouts for a 38% whiff rate. I mean, the stuff is really good with Dustin May. I mean, you watch him, it's fun. It's, you know, it's really fun to do, you know, people that can, I can't. Maybe, you know, big pitch overlays, you know, the Alex Fasts, you know, the world, the, you know, Rob Friedman, pitching ninjas of the world that make those. It's really fun to see that's the wiffle ball stuff of May, but that doesn't always translate into strikeouts. You got to know when to go to those pitches and where to go throw them. So that's something that I thought he had kind of figured out in 2021, but I guess not. I mean, I'm still in on May. I mean, this is such a huge talent, still, you know, 27 years old. So I'm still in, but how much run does he get? I don't know. It's hard to say because there's so many arms in that rotation already. I mean, Gonsolin is coming back. Obviously, you know, the big names, Yamamoto, Snell, Glasnow, Roki, Shohei will pitch at some point. I'm not fully sure when. So maybe May is in a, you know, long relief role to start the year. I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. You know, Kershaw will obviously factor in at some point. So I don't know. I'm not out, but it's really hard to kind of imagine like how many innings he gets this year. But what are your thoughts on Dustin May at this point, Chris?
I have no idea. I mean, the stuff looks better than the results, at least from a whiff standpoint. I think he could really play up in a closer role. I'm not sure they're ready to do that yet. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, he could go a lot of ways. I think they could give him run as starter. But I also think you draft him knowing that you could get results from multiple different ways. So, you know, I don't know. I don't have a great feel for what they're going to do. The rotation's very crowded, but the rotation's also injury-prone. Shoot, Dustin May's injury-prone himself, so that also is a bit of an issue. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's too soon right now to sit here and try to honestly say, like, what's his dynasty outlook? I don't know. The best fit's probably in the bullpen, if I had to guess.
Yeah, imagine bringing in Dustin May into that mix along with Tanner Scott, along with Kirby Yates, Blake Treinen, Kopech whenever he's back. It's already a nasty bullpen. You know, Dustin May, absolutely, he could close out games. I think he has the stuff for it. But, yeah, we'll see. That's a big kind of wait and see on Dustin May right now. Very much to be determined, but still love the stuff there. So I'm hoping he can figure it out. You know, maybe they trade him, you know, to the spot where he can start. Who knows? We'll wait and see, but it should be an interesting year. See how that, you know, who can stay healthy in that Dodgers rotation, who steps up when the inevitable IL stints happen. It'll be a fun one. But all right, this got to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners who submitted questions, and thank you to everyone for tuning in again this episode. Always appreciate the support. We'll be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.